Paul Duane's Irish folk horror film, All You Need Is Death, is now playing in select theaters and on digital from XYZ Films. Beyondfest says, "You'll never be able to hear another folk tune without shivering in fear." David Jenkins of Little White Lies calls it grimly refreshing and confident. You can tell that everyone involved in the making really understood and appreciated the assignment. Watch the genuinely horrifying All You Need Is Death, available everywhere you buy movies.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Welcome to Development Hell. For every horror movie that hits VOD, countless others end up DOA. Development Hell is the podcast dedicated to unearthing these cursed horror productions. We're going to find out what went wrong and then decide if these titles still stand a shot at the green light. I am your host, Josh Korngut. I am a filmmaker in Toronto, Canada. This podcast is a proud member of the Dread Podcast Network. Now, sometimes we like to shake things up, and we sit down with the most exciting voices in horror to see what projects they might have on the go or stuck in development hell. Today, we have an interview with director, writer, and actor Josh Rubin. Josh's latest feature is Werewolves Within. This is the horror comedy adaptation of the Ubisoft VR party game of the same name. The VR game is a cult favorite, and this film adaptation from IFC Films has a lot of hype around it right now. It's going to be premiering at the Tribeca Film Festival on June 16th. It's still going to have a limited theatrical run starting on June 25th. And it's also going to go on demand starting on July 2nd. Today we sit down with Josh Rubin to talk about his experience directing Werewolves Within, and we discuss a couple of his projects that are lost in development hell. Please enjoy this conversation with Josh Rubin. How would you introduce yourself in your own words?
Probably a Caucasian 37-year-old filmmaker just trying to make waves, you know, as he feels he deserves, frankly. You know, just a lot of taking, a lot of talking through people.
Yeah, I know the type. I know the type. you guys are often featured on podcasts.
Yes, exactly. Just another, you know, a comedian with a mild belly just trying to make his way through the audio world.
I always ask this, and it's always inappropriate, but I'm Jewish, and I feel like you have kind of a Jewish name, and I want to know, are you part of the persuasion?
Joshua Benjamin Rubin, and it would have been Rabinowitz. Yeah, okay. Had my dad's mom not asked her new husband, Rob the Inuit. So yes, I'm very much so. But on my dad's side, my mom's a Christian Scientist, but she does take Tylenol. So
we had that in my family for a while, but I feel like everything is on the up and up now. Congratulations on Werewolves Within. I got to watch it. Instant classic. Are you excited for the upcoming Tribeca premiere?
I'm losing my mind. Yeah, I can't. I can't wait. I'm sort of readying my CBD gummies and prepping to quell the anxiety.
It's going to be in person. Thank gosh. I feel like you just made it. It just sort of the line in the sand time wise.
I agree. I kind of can't believe it. Does feel like I've like crossed oceans to get here from like my first modest little movie scare me to this and every pandemic in between or just the one. Maybe we'll come out on the other side where we'll actually be able to see it on the old big screen.
Weird time to break through as a filmmaker, probably. Very. What's more exciting, getting ready for Tribeca or when you were getting ready for Sundance?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, what's the bigger deal?
You know, less anxiety. You know, probably like, oh, wow, you're suddenly going to be thrust around amongst several contemporaries. Definitely pulling down masks to give kisses and fist bumps. Mm-hmm, but hey, vaccines work. I'm excited. Sundance 2020 was the first super spreader event here in the States. So it was a delight to be a part of that. You know, hi, Mr. Maltin.
Yeah, I'm assuming you've done the festival circuit a lot as an actor. Is it different as a director? Like, do they treat you better?
I suppose so, yes. I mean, if by festival circuit, you mean, you know, Slam Dance the year Heath Ledger died and everybody's Palm Pilot went off
because Whoa, I was really?
Cameo in my friend's movie. Yeah, my buddy Dan Schechter made a movie called Goodbye Baby, and it came out just before Gone Baby Gone, so you can imagine.
Oh, my condolences.
Yeah, R.I.P. I was there at Slam Dance, which is basically just, you know, Sundance's little brother. Like, can I play? And it's like, no. On a small screen. That was really my biggest, I think, experience at a festival next to maybe, you know, Cinequest or something. But
Cinequest is fun. All the genre festivals are way better, in my opinion. No offense. How did you get involved adapting this iconic game? Was this your idea or did someone come to you?
No, this was Mishnah Wolf. Mishnah had developed this script with Ubisoft's or through Ubisoft's Women's Film and Television Fellowship and kicked its ass. And then they needed a director to helm it. My producers, Natalie Metzger and Matt Miller, you know, they had seen an early cut of Scare Me, my first movie, and we're like, oh, you can actually maybe do this. And your vibe might be appropriate for this Snowden creature feature. Do you want to throw your hat in the ring? And I was terrified at the prospect of what I thought was going to be a video game movie, but it was so much more. And here we are.
Well, first of all, how dare you? Because my next question is, how do you feel about video game adaptations? And do you have a favorite?
I've never seen, like, you know, Doom or Silent Hill. I saw the trailer for Assassin's Creed. How dare I? But Ubisoft I was a little nervous, admittedly, because they don't have the best of reputation. I'll just come out and say it. We made ourselves the best video game adaptation in history.
Factual and true, but like, again, it's not saying a huge amount, although I am a fan. Resident Evil, how can you be mad?
Oh my gosh, you can't be. Mila Jovovich, it's like multipass, like how far we've all come, you
know? Multipass, I just rewatched that, holds up.
It does?
Oh, I mean, I thought so, personally.
It's a shame that, you know, like He Do We Not Speak Of is canceled, but she was great in that. And I thought Bruce was just a dream. And it's like, you know. Isn't the director like a bad boy?
I mean, I think he's French. So I just kind of, I moved on. I didn't see that last movie because it looked kind of boring. Big fan of Scare Me and, as of today, Werewolves Within. What's your relationship with horror?
Oh, it was the warm blanket for a kid who didn't have many buddies. Yeah, I had an older sister who introduced me to horror when I was, you know, when like Friday the 13th and Freddy were like always on cable. Kane Hodder, I almost said Robert Downey Jr.
Imagine he could play Freddy, though, I feel like he'd kill it.
I think he would, too. Pardon the pun, but very, way even more verbose, but also subdued, you know, bring something to the table.
Who's the top, Freddy or Jason?
Top?
Yeah.
Well, I think my guess would be, you know, my guess would be that Jason is sort of a secret bottom.
I'm glad that you went there because I feel like you always have to look at who is the obvious and then switch it.
Right, exactly. It's just like, you know, Christopher Walken says about acting choices. It's like, you know, do the opposite.
Okay, it applies.
Iconic. Same applies here. But I will say, recently, true story, I was on the Clubhouse app, iconic, and Kane Hodder was in Horror Room. I said, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm you know, my little avatar is next to and I'm speaking to one of the two, you know, legends I grew up watching, you know, Freddy and Jason. Mm-hmm. Here's Jason. He said, well, just to put it out there, Freddy is a bitch.
Oh, yeah, he good just for like, him. Said it. Good for him.
Yeah, shots fired, you know.
I get the sense that he's a dick. This is my feeling. Opposite.
Like, not only was Kane, that was like the big joke of the conversation. And then he was just like very subdued and sweet and like a little small town kind of guy who, you know, was just describing his stunt career that turned into the chance to like be given an opportunity. And then when he left the room, all of the other horror icons in the room, like, you know, Barbara Crampton, and were just sort of pouring on the compliments, like, oh man, Kane, if you guys don't know, he's one of the sweetest and most wonderful. And that's why the Freddy bitch comment just lit me up.
It's true. And also, it's true. Freddy is a bitch. So what was, like, the horror movie that, like, fucked you up as a kid? What was the movie that, like, you were just not the same anymore?
Wow, that's a great question. I mean, I want to say, I keep saying it's Stephen King's Cat's Eye.
Is that like your like cool answer, or is that the real thing? Because if that's the real thing, I'm really here for it.
I think that's the real one. Like, even as a kid, I was somehow like lured in by James Woods, RIP in many ways. Looking through his house and like seeing boots in the closet, but it turning out just to be boots and not another man, even though he was like being watched, and the weird imagery, like the cigarette smoking stuff. And we loved cats, and yet there was like a cat that was like being electrocuted on that electric floor. And then the troll, it was like it had this dread about it you couldn't get away from. I think that one fucked me up.
I literally don't remember a single thing that you said. I only remember someone walking on a ledge, and that is my sole memory of that. And, oh, also the iconic cover. I will continue to say iconic, even if you make fun of me. It's just.
Oh, no, I'm going to continue.
It works.
That's not making fun.
It works.
It does. And you can say it after anything, and I will.
You really
all
can.
Of my press, I will be using.
You're going to keep going. Good. You've definitely, at least with these two features that I've seen, seem to have a very distinct directing style. Is this calculated, or are you just following the impulse and hoping for the best?
Just trying to be Taika Waititi and Lee Whannell, someone who doesn't have Spielberg money but is trying to make a name for himself. I actually, if you want to get really inside baseball, I think someone who or a few folks have a similar style, I think that's kind of becoming a bit of a soup. Like, I'm noticing that on Barry, when Bill Hader directs, he does a similar thing that I do, and I wonder if it's just simply even though us actors that have been on set many different sets and have worked with many different directors aren't so technically proficient, but we like keep the camera on the performance and let a lot of action kind of happen while the camera stays very tempered. Wes Anderson does this too. Like, I think Taika Waititi does it, but I notice that like Bill Hader and his amazing episodes of Barry, he also kind of does this thing. And I feel like we keep the camera sort of tempered and don't get terribly Edgar Wright about it, but make it very sort of or allow the performances to sort of come out. I prefer a Mike Nichols comparison. I mean, come on, you know, I'm just trying to recreate post-production.
Wow, I mean, congratulations for even allowing that for yourself. That's big.
Yeah, well, you know, happiness is equilibrium. Shift your weight. You know, that's something you always used to say.
Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf film is the reason I'm gay. Like, I feel like that is what did it. So,
wow.
Right. Yeah. It's the queerest movie probably of all time. This is my official.
I haven't seen that, but I saw Birdcage with my mom at the Hudson Valley Mall. And aww. I was like, you know, I was a Robin Williams fan. I was just sort of blown away and found myself doing impressions of Nathan Lane, even though I'm, you know, fairly straight kid anyway, but to do that impression, it, on tour high school and iconic.
Iconic. So once me and my boyfriend for Halloween decided it would be fun to go on one of those like party cruises, never do it. And we dressed up as the Birdcage too. And I was obviously Nathan Lane. And it was very straight and very bro-y to the point where I was like uncomfortable.
Oh,
and
then, no.
But man. Twist, somehow my outfit changed perfectly into Jonah Hill from Wolf of Wall Street. And I tell you, the straights loved it. So it worked
out. Mm-hmm. Well, it's just that kind of thing where it reminds me of like when my ex-girlfriend and I went to a Halloween party and she was meant to be Khaleesi, but everyone was like, Ilsa?
Oh.
Yeah, and it was, I guess, more accepted. It was like before, I guess that was when Ilsa was like more of a cultural icon than, you know, Khaleesi. But yeah, I understand your pain, basically, or your success.
Mm-hmm. And all four characters, hot and adorable. So the cast of Werewolves Within... So good.
Oh, thank
you. Huge cast. Did you handpick these people or were you lucky?
Both. So I knew that if I was going to be working with actors on, I don't want to say on another level than, you know, Chris and I were from Scare Me, but just like more talented actors and like more of a chance of an intimidation game, that at the very least I wanted a no assholes policy. It's like, you know, Vince Vaughn carries. It's like, why do we have to have him? And then B, I knew that I wanted a friend there for me personally. And if my actors could have skin in the game, that at least they could suggest a buddy to come out to play their spouse or their sort of sparring partner. So I was able to say, first of all, I know I want friends. Milana Weintraub, she's hella talented. We go way back. Ubisoft loved her. Come aboard. George Basil, known him forever, he's one of the funniest people ever. But also, like, if I have a total emotional meltdown at the end of a day out here in Fleischmann's in the middle of winter, George and I can at least, like, get a margarita or a hot toddy, I guess. And I also knew that he would be so sort of disarming. He was my secret weapon, my emotional shield. And then you kind of build that out from there. You say, George, who do you want to play your spouse? This is a big deal. Who do you want to play the Gwen to your Marcus? And he'd say, what about Sarah Burns? And I'd go, holy shit, Barry, she's so funny. And then Harvey Guillen, you know, I'd say, who do you want to play your husband? And he'd say, how about Cheyenne Jackson? I go, oh my God, I love him. And all shook up.
Those two were just maybe my favorite part. No, I'm lying. Wonderful. Obviously, Michaela Watkins is going to be my favorite part in anything.
Oh, man. Yeah. She's like the first on-screen Karen, I think, you know, within the past 16 and a half months. The new definition thereof.
Hey,
yeah,
I was rooting for her because she just loves her dog and crafts. Sorry.
Oh, yeah.
And I respect both of those things. And she's so good. And also, was this the Veep reunion? Because it felt like it.
Wait a minute. So I'm terrible. I need to know who the Veep counterparts
only
were.
Only Sam Richardson and Michaela Watkins.
Oh, okay. Yes, Michaela. She did have... Well, I suppose it was. I mean, you know, to a degree, but it was also like, I want a real who's who of indie film, yet you've appeared in Spielberg movies. Like, you know what I mean? So it's like, we're going to get people who not only have like done summer stock and improv, but also have like worked on these massive things. So that at worst case scenario, they'd all understand the pain and sweat of a long day with one camera. And luckily they did. Like, you know, it was once I kind of actors suggested people that they wanted to, you know, portray their spouses that we kind of go after. It also became a list of like people I wanted to work on. Michaela, I'd met a couple of times through our mutual friend, Natalie Morales. And she's just like, it's wonderful. The sweetest, the coolest, the fucking funniest. And then to also be able to be like, I've always wanted to work with Michael Chernus. Oh, my God. Let's have him play a scumbag.
I'm still kind of in awe of this hilarious ensemble that you put together, specifically Harvey, Michaela, and Sam. I was just like, holy crap. Oh, and I'm sorry, did we say her name? Is it Milana?
Yeah, Milana Weintraub.
Okay, I looked her up. I was like, how do I not know who this person is? And I discovered that she's not A-list superhero famous, and I'm like so shocked.
Everybody's saying that. I hope this blows open the doors, you know?
Wait, so going back a little bit to your directing style, I just want to say... I like most people, I'm obsessed with like really good font and text, and the glowing credits were just like mwah, beautiful. I loved it. Was that you?
Big ups to Brett Bachman, my editor. I mean, I did say like, hey, I want this to feel somewhere between Arachnophobia and Beetlejuice with this kind of style and vibe. And he was like, I got you, dude. And then just, you know, opened up his graphics program. He was like, it would be an honor to do the titles as well. And I was like, Brett, you've killed it at every turn. You can do whatever you want. And he destroyed the titles. Because you look at those and you see Werewolves Within as a title. It's so striking that for him to put it over the edge with that style of font that's so reminiscent of that era we all grew up in, the VHS era, you know, the Beetlejuice and Tremors of it all. It's like, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so good. And kind of like a bit of an Are You Afraid of the Dark vibe too.
Yeah,
which is my everything, is like Goosebumps, Are You Afraid of the Dark moment.
That's
which
everything.
Oh, really? Sorry, I didn't want to like age shame you, but I never know where the line in the sand is for people.
I know. So, I don't want to be ageist, but it's just kind of like, I know what it is.
Well, okay, now I'm going to put you to the test. Do you have a favorite Are You Afraid of the Dark moment / episode / villain?
I mean, I feel like it's trodden to say when you zoom out and realize they're in a big pinball machine, but probably... the pirate scared the shit out of me. Maybe even more the girl who lived in the wall or was seen in the...
Yep, I know who you're talking about. Because this is my world. Yeah, very good, very scary. Also very Canadian, and I don't think you are, but I am. I'm in Toronto. Oh, and wow. that whole era of like Goosebumps, Are You Afraid of the Dark, for some reason, all of that was just filmed in Canada. So it all just is like the most Canadian
it
vibes imaginable.
It just scratches all itches. It's just all sides of the lizard brain. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Do you consider Werewolves Within to be a horror comedy?
I would say it's more of a comedy horror.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Okay. I'll just go ahead and rearrange that for you. Yes, I do.
Okay. I write often, and I have been warned off by producers on the genre of horror comedy because people seem to be very scared that you can't sell it. Have you heard these rumors yourself? Have you been discriminated against?
Left and right. I mean, again, as a 37-year-old Caucasian filmmaker who hasn't been handed enough, you know, having coffee, drinking, wearing Doc Martens. I wouldn't say so much discrimination. I did have one conversation ages ago with an executive who was an executive very long and ended up going back into the fashion industry making jeans because he was wrong when he said comedy and horror don't work. And I wanted to be like, did you see Beetlejuice?
Was this Kevin Klein? No, wait, that's an actor. Who's the designer of the name Klein? No, was this Kevin Klein? Actually, I'm going to stick with it. I'm going to be wrong strong. This is huge. This is huge.
You worked at a very small production company. I was so excited to go out to lunch with this one person where I was like, you know, I want to make horror comedies. And he was like, that doesn't work. They don't exist. And it's like, but at every turn, it seems to.
That's a strange take because I've seen so many of them.
Yeah, correct. And it was like, did you grow up in the 80s? Like, you know, Freddy Krueger is a cartoon character.
He became a cartoon character.
Correct. But yeah. did it, you know, hey, more props to Bob Shea. I mean, it morphed genres and they kept the gore. So, I think if anything, people are now curious because there's going to be kind of a resurgence of horror movies being fun again. Like, I want to make Quiet Place, but I also want to make you laugh. If I can scare the shit out of you, but I can also make you somehow laugh at like someone doing a weird walk and, you know, hitting their knee on a coffee table or something, which I guess is my go-to joke, then I'll take it. There you go.
Yeah, one of the reasons I asked if you were really a horror person or if you fell into it is just wanted to make sure I wasn't dealing with a John Krasinski. And so it's funny that you brought that up.
Can you imagine if I was... I've never met him. I'm sure he's perfectly nice, but I feel like he's so passionate about the drama and Carpenter of it all. And me, I'm kind of like, yeah, but Clue, you know?
Yeah, I see. He said he like tried to explain how A Quiet Place wasn't horror. And then I immediately never watched A Quiet Place or its sequel. And I'll never participate in his properties again. I'm that mad about it. Yeah.
He said it wasn't a horror?
He like, you know how like these pretentious dudes are like, they refuse to categorize things as horror because it's less than.
Oh boy.
As an artiste, what is development hell to you?
Oh, an unfortunate part of the process, I'd say. I think inevitably, as you grow a bit of experience, build a name for yourself as an artiste, you will enter into the inevitable development hell, with your work where people will encourage you up to a point. You've got to take this wonderful thing out. In fact, it might even get bought. It might even get optioned. And then you find yourself hitting a wall where you're not making it. You're just waiting for notes. And that was hell for me in my personal experience.
I hear through the grapevine, Judy, that you have a project that was stuck in development hell for some time called Lee's Kill List. Is this something familiar to you?
Absolutely correct. It was a great idea, a great pilot. Yeah.
Oh, a pilot. Okay, so can you tell everybody in the world, there's like hundreds of thousands of people listening, what was or is Lee's Kill List?
Okay, so Lee's Kill List was a concept that my former directing partner and writing partner at the time had conceived and pitched at a lunch meeting to a former executive in New York who worked at Comedy Central. And the idea, if I can remember correctly, I'm sure there's a tighter log line, but it's essentially about a man who, cleaning salesman, who realizes his calling is to be a Dexter-like serial killer. And he, as he scratches the itch of his new trait, let's call it, he also expertly can clean up after himself. And it was pitched way more punchy than that, but the executive instantly was like, I'm going to give you $50,000 to make it wasn't a pilot, it was like a sizzle piece. Mm-hmm. And we killed ourselves, put everything into it, put money into it, more money, went over budget. Got John Hurd, like the dad from Home Alone, RIP, unfortunately, cameo, and the brilliant Henry Zebrowski to star, and last podcast on the left. Yes, and it proceeded to not only get killer praise throughout Comedy Central, but it turned into at least a year of waiting on an answer before they denied it come a show at Comedy Central. The rights went back to us, and then we went back into development at IFC, where it a year later died again.
Yeah, you just like want to keep suffering, and you want to keep beating it up, right? Like you don't want to let it go, because that's what development hell is. Because I found a bird in the park. It was hurt. I freaked out. I didn't know what to do. So I tried to call the city. I was sitting on the ground for like half an hour. And then this lady came with a box and she was like, and she was going to take it away and help it. I was like, okay, thank God. And she said to me, you know, it's one thing to die or to face death, but it's another thing to just be out here suffering all day. And I was like, that is absolutely true.
Yeah, I agree. And
were you mad about the movie Kill List, or was this way after that?
Oh God, I don't even. I've heard of it, and I think it actually is an IFC film. I think we were way before our Lee's Kill List was 150 years ago. It was before anything, film, TV, any idea. It was after Dexter, though, so at least we had that reference. Where we basically waited 6 months to get a note. To get notes, rather, it was how it was phrased to us. We got on the phone all excited. Now we get a little bit of movement. And the note was to remove the word cleavage from the episode, at which point we did that, exported to PDF, and then waited another few months. And that was right before it died a second time.
Which is weird because it's truly one of the better words.
I agree. It also has to do with earth science. You know, it doesn't just have to do with breasts. You're talking about rock, you know, and
tectonic shifts, you know, all that.
There you go. Sedimentary.
Wow.
Remember any of the
I just had to Google the different types of rocks because I had a joke I wanted to make to a friend on Messenger the other day. So yeah, those are the different kinds. Do you have any other projects that you can reach into development hell and sort of pull back out and say, I killed this?
Well, let me see. Off the top of the dome, I can't say that I do. Is that because the one that was so that occurred so brutally was these. Not only for us to like feel like we were going to sell it for a bunch of money, no money. Attach a showrunner, nice enough, but it didn't really work. And then to not only like fail at one network or be told after a year of compliments and great praise that this isn't going to work out, jump to another place and have it be again slaughtered. After, by the way, that second network jump, we were sort of encouraged to put it more in our voice than we felt it was at the previous spot.
Wait. Encouraged to put it more in your. Can you say that one more time?
Yeah,
I want to know what that means.
So basically, when we were at Comedy Central, the mandate was: look, we want several jokes a page. And we said, okay, yeah. I mean, we like a bit of a darker comedy, and so we kind of overreached a pinch to make this thing as funny as possible.
Okay.
When it died at the network and went to IFC. IFC, home of Portlandia, and Hank Azaria's Brockmire, if you will.
Okay.
I think we were pre-Brockmire. There's some, you know, Brockmire AD in BC.
I was just going to make that joke, and I'm very mad that I couldn't.
And I was trying to think of how to put the letters together. It was like A, B.
I couldn't, and that's why I didn't do it. It was too hard.
Yeah. BBC, Fleabag. That would have been great. But so at IFC, they were also wonderful, by the way, I should have said this caveat, you know, I'm probably putting myself out here. Every development executive, everyone was wonderful. Everybody was killer to work with. I make no joke. No, you know, everybody working in that industry, it's a difficult industry to work in anyway and to be a development person. Everyone was great to us. But when we went to IFC, their kind of mandate was everything as weird, as eccentric, as irreverent as you wanted to make it, as Coen Brothers-y as you want to make it, go for it. So all the jokes you felt a little icky about, you could take them out. You can put in all the weirdness. And we thought, oh my gosh, we're in heaven. Well, 6 months later, cleavage joke. 6 months after that, sorry, it's not going to go here either. I mean, I was like, what?
That sounds like a terrible dream that you're never going to wake up from. Have you been approached by Marvel yet? Like, what is your superhero movie? I feel like it's coming, right? I feel like... I feel like it has to at this point.
It's before Ant-Man 4. It'll be, I would like to think.
I was going
to
say, if you're lucky, oh my God.
I mean, I would way prefer Darkman. I would love to revisit Sam Raimi's Darkman.
Raimi is shaken.
Yeah. Dude, I have an awesome angle for it, but I just don't know. Some people, you know, they shoot me down. They're like, hey, I don't think a lot of people think it's relevant enough. But you know what? I think we're ready for a bizarre horror hero. This is a character who's very angry, going mad in the dark, and, you know, doesn't feel like he's deserving enough of love. And I think there's a lot to say there.
Listen, if Joker proved anything, is that we are here for movies about angry white guys. It's funny because when I riffed on Marvel, the real question I wanted to ask is, do you have a dream adaptation to direct? And so I kind of love the route we're going with Darkman, but you are allowed to switch gears because I am asking this question.
I don't think I would dare. I think at one point I probably wanted to, like, you know, helm and star in like a Robin Williams biopic. And now I'm like, no, I don't think that would be a props. And no one could do it right. But I do love any excuse to, oh, I don't know, play with horror effects and prosthetics and also have an excuse to do a few Dutch angles and make one laugh. And I think if I can get away with that, you know, like a genre flick that can freak you out a little bit, but also make you go like, I can't believe I'm laughing. If I could be the Todd Solondz of
my God,
Marvel, you know,
is that how you describe Todd? Because that's
I just thought that would be a fun reference to get a giggle out of you, Josh.
And you got one. My friend group do this digital movie club because we're cute and all that.
Mm.
And I was thinking pretty hard about bringing in happiness.
Oh my God.
I was like, really? And the only reason I didn't is because part of our shtick is that we have to play the trailer for the movie. And you would not believe the garbage trailer 1998 put out for that movie.
Let me guess, it doesn't feature any Dylan Baker.
The music, first of all, for one thing, they're marking it as like a quirky comedy.
Oh boy. I think that's why my sister brought the VHS home and made it like a family viewing.
Your sister sounds, I'm going to say it, iconic.
Oh, she's incredible. I don't know if you know Rachel Yamagata, but my sister, she's a singer. She's a singer-songwriter. That's my sister.
Your sister is Rachel Yamagata. I've been listening to Rachel Yamagata since high school, which is a long time. So that's
BB your love, man.
Oh yeah, my God. Yeah. I'm like, who's Josh Rubin? I don't care. This is who I want on my podcast.
I know.
I'm sorry.
She has obviously a different dad, but when I say my sister's half Japanese, they look at me and they're like, I can see it. We have different dads, but she...
Kidding, I'm sure you have.
Not many people look it up, you know, it's fun trivia.
That's wild. Yeah, I'm looking...
Now you're distracted, right? You're like,
I'm looking up, like, what were the songs that I liked? I literally am Googling your sister.
BB Your Love, Deal...
I'm sorry, no, I'm not going to do this to you. This can be on my own time. That's fine.
Hell no. I would much rather talk about my sister than my love of Tales from the Dark Side, the movie. You know?
Oh, Tales from the Dark Side, the movie. You know, one of my episodes upcoming very well could be Tales from the Dark Side Part 2. Because it did not occur, but it very well could have. I don't know if you know anything about my podcast, but generally speaking, this is not how I roll. Like, I usually pick an actual horror property that was going to get made, but then didn't.
That sounds like heaven. And you often hash that out with, a fellow industrier.
Usually I do. But if I get like a famous white filmmaker, I just interview them. But
the one you're like, holy crap, I'm bereft that didn't happen.
Thank you for asking. Oh, I know literally all of them. I like could have a doctorate in this. And iconically and sadly enough, the one that I like, my white whale, is a video game adaptation, and I'm not even a video game girl. So funny enough, there was a horror video game 2001 called Alice, and it was like a very spooky Tim Burton-esque version of Alice in Wonderland. Wow, you should just interview me for a while. That was fun.
I'm happy to. I mean, I thought we were getting somewhere with Rachel Yamagata.
I know, finally. I can't believe Rachel Yamagata is your sister. That's funny. Wow, what a creative, adorable family. Wait, you never gave me a real answer, though, for your dream adaptation or sequel.
Girl,
or something.
I'm telling you, Darkman. I want to play in Darkman space.
I thought you said no. Like, I can't do it. Like, I would never. I'm like too much of a little bee. But no, you are picking Darkman.
I think you did say that. I wish I was more interested. Like, I wish I could be like, you know, Dostoevsky's. You know what I mean? Like, I couldn't do Uncle Vanya.
Who's Miss Julie?
I went to theater school too. Yeah, I want to remake Women of a Certain Age. Is that even a movie? I don't even know if that feels like it might be. Eat, Pray, Love, but you know.
Eat, Pray, Love. There was The Women. I feel like we need like a older white millennial man to like make more movies about women.
I agree. It's happening. This is happening left and right, and yet not nearly enough. You know, I want to be the male Greta Gerwig, but do it my way.
Oh, can you imagine? That's truly the dream. Question's a little bit similar to what I just asked you, but don't worry, I'm gonna make this work. If you could direct a sequel, okay? I know I said before adaptation, blah blah blah, it's all jargon. But if you could direct a sequel to an iconic horror property, what would it be? Now, if you need some time to think about it, I can always just pitch you my go-to first. But if you have one ready,
I want to know what your go-to is.
Oh my God, of course you do. Okay, first of all, I'm just going to start by asking, were you aware that there is a third I Know What You Did Last Summer film?
No.
Yeah, okay, so there was. Direct to DVD, obviously, 2006. Obviously. I'll Always Know What You Did Last Summer. What a title, right?
Oh, baby.
Yeah, this is real. This is not mine. This is like a real
thing.
Did
Mariah Carey do the song? Like, I just immediately hear her, you know?
I mean, I wish. Like, I'm not... The irony is dropped. Like, I do wish. But no. It did have a supernatural twist. It's about, like, you know, like, the legend of the Hook Man is, like, swooping around and killing people. Very bad, obviously. Wow. So, that said, I would make a fourth I Know What You Did Last Summer film in canon, though, no reboot. And this is my pitch. So you get Anne Hesh from the first movie. Please tell me you remember. Yeah, you do. Thank God.
Great idea.
You put her in the Louisiana South swamplands for no reason, no good reason at all. And she's like sitting on one of those like shacks on sticks, like in the swamp. And she's like, rocking back and forth with like a rocking chair and a shotgun because she knows. And then like a bunch of kids on a motorboat get stuck around her. And then, I mean, that's about it. But yeah, I'm going to call it.
Wait, I love.
You love it. Wait, no, before you praise me, I have to tell you the title. The number, but spelt out like F-O-U-R, Forever Summer.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's my pitch. So I really apologize that you have to follow me, though. But that was enough time for you to think, I think.
I think I got a pretty good one, actually.
Oh, my God, you do.
I think there is a Little Shop of Horrors sequel. Be rad, and a musical, but you, like, up the gore factor, but also up, like, I'm not talking just, like, getting Lin-Manuel Miranda in here. I'm talking, like, get, like, you know, I'm not even cool enough to come up with
I mean, what else is he doing, really?
To overshadow. Precisely, Mary Poppins. But I think... You get perhaps a younger cast, maybe a little Ryan Murphy action, maybe get a little Kathy Bates situation. I don't know.
Bring back Jack Nicholson if he is alive.
Oh my gosh, just stuff his mouth full of cotton and just put him in a chair. He's in and out in 2 hours.
Absolutely. I kind of feel like Bill Hader could be the new guy in the chair. I have so many ideas.
Oh, absolutely. If not the biker, I think he'd love that.
I don't know who that is. I'm really reaching for these references, Steve, to be Martin. Honest. Of course. Yeah, I love that. Also, I was just listening to some podcasts talking about the 80s film, and the music was written by this like super iconic gay guy that died of AIDS not long after, and it's very, I don't know, interesting to me, and I want to know more. Who also did the music to Beauty and the Beast, so that's cool.
Oh, wow. Oh, man, it's just, I was seeing more in the high school, the junior high production, and Brad and Rocky Horror, of which there is a...
Hot.
There is a... Well, it wasn't hot for being in, like, ninth grade, but
you were playing him.
Controversy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we did wear fishnets, though, and I think it was a little controversial.
My high school also did that when I was in ninth grade, but it was an art school, so nobody cared.
We had to change touch me to the Toucha Tango.
I hate it, though. Yeah. That's a hate crime. That's homophobic, actually.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, mm-hmm. it's suppressive. It's brutalizing. Yeah.
Yes, it's terrible.
I won't have it.
I had a callback for Eddie. Didn't get it. I'm still sad. Wow. I'm still sad. Still
Molly
grieving.
Sugarman played Eddie. We had a girl helm that one.
So did we. And I was so offended. I was like, excuse moi. Anyway, I don't need to relive that trauma.
That's okay. I'm here for it.
Okay, so we were talking a little bit about your directing style, and you seemed kind of embarrassed. So let's get back to that. How do you get those like creative juices going? Is it through music or visuals or Pinterest? Like, how do you do it?
That's a great question. Well, music's a big part of it. I do save the the nuggets from the Spotify Discover Weekly every once in a while, you know, not to knock title.
I'm an Apple Music girl though, so I have to go. Bye.
No, it's fine. I'm still on the Napster train as well. But yeah, one thing I do save a tune here and there that gets me excited. Like I think that Belafonte track of Boo Boo. Gosh, Mama Boo Boo, that I put at the end of Scare Me. That was really inspiring.
Cool.
You know, I pull them aside. So music gets me going. I get, you know, I probably could open up my artistic outlook and archive and expand a bit. Like I barely know what like Breathless is about, but I could tell you everything about Weekend at Bernie's 2.
I mean, I would much rather watch Weekend at Bernie's 2, and I've never seen it. Do you have your phone close to you?
I do.
I want to know what was like the last thing you were listening to musically that you're willing to disclose. What's in your recently listened to moment over here? And I don't want you to lie, even unless you need to.
No, it's fine. It's kind of basic. It's God Only Knows featuring the Royal Choral Society of and London Symphony Orchestra. It's like not like a big deal.
I'm obsessed, and that's going to be our outro music today, because I think that's a funny joke. No, I'm making that up. Although recently I did switch my theme song to For Elise with rain going over it, because I did do an episode about it, and that is a moment from it.
Ooh, so that's a good one. What if I had said All Star? Like, that's my go-to anywhere. Like, everybody instantly knows Smash Mouth's All Star. All you have to do is say one word.
So, say what you will about it. It's probably the only song I have fully memorized.
That's totally fair. That's completely valid. I don't. I know the Chickadee China part, but who doesn't? But beyond that, I just kind of get lost and sort of hum along.
Oh, my goodness. That sounded personal. Did you know they have another hit that's other than All Star? I could not tell you what it's called.
Does it have something to do with being a celebrity, or I'm driving around in a big truck?
Are you actually asking this, or is this just because I don't know?
I mean, I don't either. It's sort of a statement.
Also, Vanessa Carlton has a second single that actually did well, and people don't know about this either. And it's also important to me.
Is that her, or is that Branch?
No, that's so funny, because yes, they literally are the same person. And they both look a lot like my mom when she was young. Shout out to Gabe.
Oh.
Right?
What's your mom's name?
Gabriella. Right?
Oh, Gabriella, shout out.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what's next for you after this very exciting release?
Well, probably filing for unemployment. It's been a year and change. So I hope that come June 25th, I might get, you know, one job offer. I've turned a couple things down. There was one that really, really had me miffed, Josh, that came across my desk. Where they're like, do you want to come direct this film about a teenager and a serial killer that swap bodies? And I was like, this literally just came out. It's written by Michael Kennedy and directed by Chris Landon and called Freaky. And I never heard anything again. Like, even my agents, I think, were too ashamed that they had overlooked the fact that it was some plagiarism. I mean, hey, we've seen more than one body swap film. So the more the better, honestly.
For 30 seconds, I thought that you were offered that movie and you said no. And then I was going to cry for you. But no.
No, my gosh. Freaky's a perfect film.
Is this where the Vince Vaughn dig came from earlier today, which I actually really enjoyed because fuck Vince Vaughn.
Well, I hear he's a real treat, but if there's a rumor that an actor might be carrying a piece, I just don't think I'd want them around. I'm sure he's perfectly nice, and I love swingers.
Not a piece, though. Oh, God.
I think he might be carrying a piece. Yeah, and I don't know.
Like a little one, like the Michaela Watkin, like, purse piece? Or like...
Actually, he has a hard time pulling it out and getting his, like, gigantic index finger through the trigger hole.
Oh, no. He could be Jewish, but he gives me anti-Semitic energy. Even if he is Jewish.
It's like you're going to do Dragged Across Concrete. Like, you're going to voluntarily do a Mel Gibson film. It's like, guys, there are better options.
Right, yes, Mel Gibson, you know, of course. Yeah, anytime someone goes near him, unless it's Jodie Foster, I get angry.
Yeah, I just imagine if being in a scenario with him, much like I did with John C. McGinley, I'll talk openly about it, Hey Scrubs and Identity, where I just... Imagine butting heads with someone who's just so overtly masculine.
Who is this person?
I did a job with the other doctor from Scrubs, John C. McGinley, who is also in, I don't know, you'd know him immediately if you saw him. Did you say
Identity?
Identity, yes. That's my fucking favorite movie. Film with Rebecca De Mornay and John Cusack. A fantastic movie. Isn't that James Mangold? Am I crazy?
You know, I don't know. But I love that movie. Saw it in theaters with my dad. Shout out to him.
I saw it in the theater as well, but not with my father, with two people about my age. In New York City, as it were. And quite scary. I thought it was wonderful. I just imagine him and Vince just kind of being of the same ilk, where they're like, you know what we're going to do today for fun? We're going to drink an entire flask of something brown, and then we're going to start a fight with someone smaller than us, or at least go into a professional setting and talk back. And I can't imagine it sitting right with me. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I'd love to have a friendly debate.
You're right. Listen, sugar tits, So I don't know. I have nothing to follow that.
Yeah, I know. I think that's kind of how it would get. And I've been called that before by like a camp counselor when I was younger and I had bigger breasts. And I don't know. I think I have like a radar for bad men.
You sounded really beautiful and gorgeous. And I wish I could have known that person. When I was at summer camp, I remember one of my counselors said I was his favorite. And it's because we bonded over movies. So
shout out to that guy.
He was hot. Yeah.
Iconic.
Very. Okay, so you didn't give me like a title. So I feel like you know what you're doing next and you're just not telling me, and that's fine.
Honestly, it's been a whole lot of writing, like survival mode writing. Like, oh, what if I do this? Oh, what about this IP? Oh, maybe pursue Dark Man. I mean, just constantly
pursue
like, let's just
Dark Man. Do it.
Pursue. I'm actively pursuing it. I haven't had one phone call. No one will give me a shot, but I will take the swing. Maybe after the 25th and people realize we're going to cross the $1 billion mark with Werewolves Within, they'll be like, you know what? Mm-hmm. You know what we need? We need Josh Rubin's Darkman reboot, revisit, sequel.
Hey, Hulu will take on anything, I feel like.
I hope so.
I know. Well, they're doing the Hellraiser series, which is wild. And they're doing the Alien series. So I feel like they'll just do anything as a series. Also, there's rumors of a Nightmare on Elm Street series. I'll take them. Because where's Freddy at, right?
Like, I know. Oh, man. Is it like probably, it's probably in the universe. It's probably like, oh, there'll be a nod, you know. But like, it's probably just like, oh, a bunch of teenagers have problems and there's like prosthetics. I mean, I want a part of it, believe me.
I'm already planning
Unless
out my
Jared Leto's going to come in and, you know, play Freddy, in which case I don't know if I'm ready.
Listen, would it work? Maybe. Everyone hates the remake, but it wasn't bad because of what was his name, the guy that played Freddy?
Oh gosh, Little
Children.
Rob. Yeah. Are you about to say little Michael King?
Jackie Earl Haley.
Little Jackie O'Haley children.
Yeah.
Well, yes, little children's Jackie O'Haley. He's wonderful. Gosh, that movie is also one of my favorites.
Saw that with my mom. That was weird.
What does it say about me that I just feel Little Children is like a comfort film? Like, just toss it on. Just watch Patrick Wilson try and, you know, avoid Noah Emmerich.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, how do you feel about The Woodsman? Because then I feel like I can make a full-rounded opinion if I know. So
I thought Mos Def was great, you know. He was kind of great in that. I was like, damn, Mos Def is great. And like,
absolutely. I feel like he's a good actor, and I have no other reason to believe that other than this.
Comedian named Hannah Pilkes, who is in that film. She was like the little girl he sat next to on the park bench, and she was like bird watching. She's like,
and she's like, gross, get out of here. Was that her? Oh no.
Yeah, not. Or was also just kind of like, my grandpa makes me sit on his lap, and he was like, oh, I feel bad. I'll have a great day. Yeah.
This is gonna be immediately cut, but I'm very much enjoying the fact that we get to talk about this. You know, I feel like that really rounds out my questions for you. But before we let you go, do you have any questions for me about the position? Like, is there anything you need to know?
What is another must make that just leaves you bereft?
What else would I make? No, I'm going to absolutely answer this. It's too bad I'm white because I love Candyman so much. So not that. I'd love to do a new Nightmare on Elm Street movie. I hear that Elijah Wood and company have a pitch, so I feel like they could do it.
Yeah, I think Flanagan's got one, Spectre Vision. I'll take that all day. But I mean, what about one that just has left you just like, I'm so upset they haven't made it.
Sorry. Oh. I know. I'm so upset they didn't make it.
From your
Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. Why am I flustered? Okay, here's one. I'm going to like blow your mind by going again outside of the box, but Guillermo del Toro has a couple of projects that just like, why aren't they here? His Haunted Mansion was in development for a long time, which would have been just everything I need. Although they have a cool person directing that now at Disney, so that's cool. Okay, here's my answer. Guillermo del Toro, the love of my life, my husband, I'm going to say in 2010, 2009, he struck a deal with Disney where he got to make his own, basically his own like vertical at Disney called Disney.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Disney Double Dare You, where it was his own like label where he would release kid friendly horror spooky projects. And what? There was, yes, I know. And there was
created. Like creating gateway horror as just
gateway horror. Oh. Yes.
Oh my, and the afraid Kinder trauma. Can I do an impression of him or will I get canceled? Probably, but I think it's
just that be like, him. I didn't hear
I think
it.
So.
But.
What I have to, but it's mostly just the breathing, Josh. You know, it's just like Kinder trauma. I don't know. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I heard it on the last one. I did.
Oh,
good for you. Yeah. So that's my answer. And the first one he was going to do was a Haunted Mansion remake starring Ryan Gosling. And there's a really adorable photo of the two of them on the ride together.
And what? Why did that? I don't understand. So that I must know. Just be a Disney thing. Like, halt. I just think it's too much.
It's just too good. Yeah. Like, how dare we make something this quality? Like, we have to reel it in and make another Pirates movie. I think he moved on to, like, other stuff. He's famous for having amazing projects that did not make it. Like, A Scary Pinocchio, Hellboy 3, RIP.
Wait, Pinocchio isn't even happening? I thought they were, like, shooting. Or maybe there's another one. I don't know.
His Pinocchio has been in the works for at least 10 years, so yeah, I feel like that's a no-go.
Time.
I know. Yeah. That should be an episode.
No-go-kyo.
No-go-kyo. No-kyo. I don't know. I think that wraps it up for me. This was so much fun. Thank you
for
being...
It was just a pleasure.
Yeah. Thank you for being the brother of Rachel Yamagata. That's incredible.
Oh my God. I'll be her brother, you know, anytime.
Tell her about Development Hell. She can subscribe on any place that she can get her podcasts, honestly.
Oh my God, I absolutely will. I'd love it.
Obviously kidding. This was really fun. Big congratulations on Werewolves Within. I loved it. And I'm excited to see what you do next. Where can people find you on the internet?
Oh, probably at Josh Rubin, not like the sandwich. Just at Josh, R-U-B-E-N, you know, for all the updates, whether a Jason Bateman impression or a retweet of a Rolling Stone article with a blurb that includes the name of my next film, who knows?
All right. Well, thank you so much for listening to that conversation we just had with Josh Rubin. We want to thank him and IFC Films for participating in our little podcast. If you've listened all the way to the end, thank you. Incredible. I beg you, please leave a 5-star rating. And if you want to go that extra mile, you can leave a very positive review to tell me how much you loved this episode. You can remember to subscribe, and you can follow us on social media pretty much anywhere at Development Hell Pod, or if you're on Twitter, that's at Devil Hell Pod. Now, make sure that you catch Werewolves Within. It's going to have a limited theatrical run starting on June 25th, so if you can see it in theaters, that's cool. Highly recommend it. And it's also going to be on demand starting July 2nd from IFC Films. You're not going to want to miss this one. It's super funny and kind of scary, and it's like a really good murder mystery. Also, Michaela Watkins, what an icon. All right, well, thank you so much for listening, and we'll be back in a couple of weeks with a brand new episode of Development Hell.